This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and here we are. Once again, it's time for our weekly Q&A with Layla. As summer draws to a close, don't lament too much, Layla, because there's enough bad stuff happening in the world.
Right. Oh, not so well, but yeah.
So here we are, and we're answering your questions, as usual.
Yes.
Here with my capable sidekick, Layla Mutin, who is registered dietitian and also has a master's degree in the field of nutrition. Together, we work together at my practice here in Manhattan to deal with patients' thorny medical and health problems and advise them on prevention in general. And that's what we do here on our weekly Q&A with Layla. We invite your questions. Your questions can come to us at radioprogram@AOL.com, radioprogram@AOL.com. And it's been a busy week. I did a very interesting podcast with Dr. David Hassey on sulforaphane, which is a remarkable nutrient. That's one of the podcasts that, if you haven't yet heard it, it's well worth listening to because we're really up on sulforaphane as a chemo preventive agent, as a master detoxifier, great for people with chemical sensitivities and allergies, but also great for neurodegeneration. And I was looking stuff up about sulforaphane. It may be an adjunct to weight loss.
Oh, my.
Because it seems to provide a bit of a metabolic advantage.
We could add that to the arsenal.
Yes.
Very nice.
Indeed. So lots of great new information on sulforaphane and how to get it from diet. Also some controversy as to what is the best supplemental form of sulforaphane. Mm-hmm. We have a product at Fullscript, which is called... interestingly, sulforaphane. And it's... And I private label it because I source it from a company that makes a really great form of it called Zymogen. Zymogen is a company that sells products exclusively via health practitioners. So
you won't find it in the health food store.
Won't find it in the health food store. It's the real deal. They've done the science, and it delivers. So let's hear what... in terms of issues that have appeared on our radar screen this week, anything in the news that you want to talk about before we get into questions?
Besides everything else that's happening in the world and that's it's the end of summer and I'm lamenting?
Yeah. That's something uplifting. How about that?
Something uplifting. No, I think we've spent a lot of this summer pushing back on, you know, the big headlines of coconut oil is bad for you, and saturated fat is bad for you, and whew.
Yeah, enough of that. Right?
Enough of that.
Yeah, damage control, you know, it's sort of like saying repeatedly on the air, I don't beat my wife, and people will come away with the impression that maybe he does beat his wife.
Right.
For the record,
if you say
not,
it often enough, even
record,
in the negative, right.
For the record, I'm not even married. So... here's an interesting item about probiotics that I posted on Facebook. The headline here is No Guts, No Glory, Harvesting the Microbiome of Athletes. And what they discovered is that certain bacteria may enhance athletic performance. So I'm reading this article, I'm very excited, I'm trying to scroll down, you know, what's the magic probiotic that does this? And... They've unfortunately buried the lead to the very bottom of the article.
where you can discover that a certain bacteria that is present in the stool samples has the function of breaking down lactic acid.
Ah.
Okay?
That's beneficial for athletes, right?
And the bacteria in question is, it's so buried in the story here, and it's of practical importance because you'll want to, if you're an athlete, you'll want to get a hold of this probiotic.
Unless it's on the doping list.
No, that's the perfect.
If it's going to enhance athletic and
legal performance enhancer.
Legal performance enhancer.
Yeah.
That's important.
They found a type of bacteria in ultramarathoners that can help break down carbohydrates and fiber that wasn't present in rowers. And that and the reason is you sort of adapt to the kind of exercise you do. Rowers is sort of short sprints.
Mm-hmm.
And so
that's
ultimately,
a terrific form of exercise.
This is cool. I think they're deliberately withholding the names of these things because it's proprietary research. This guy who does research says the team plans to launch a company this fall called Fit Biomics. I would like to think that a year after we launch, we could have a novel probiotic on the market. All right? So they're going to do more research. They're going to find out, you know, what is the key to athletic performance from the standpoint of the right microbiome-enhancing probiotic. Kind of cool.
Very, very cutting edge, as is the microbiome. So this is...
Yep.
Wow. Apropos.
So
it breaks down lactic acid.
Yeah. Mm. So it actually enables you to derive more fuel, but also to have less of the lactic acid, which accumulates and causes you to have muscle soreness and fatigue.
Right, right. Interesting.
Yeah, good stuff.
Okay. It's not on the doping list. That's okay.
Right.
We have an email from Larry. We touched upon this, actually, at the end of last week's podcast. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, should I occasionally fast from taking certain supplements? Everybody's heard about a drug addict's need for more and more. What is it about the body that allows it to adapt to a substance as if it has a memory and build up a tolerance? I know that certain vitamins and supplements are needed daily like food, but here's an example of what I mean. When I first started taking Wellbetics PGX, it worked like gangbusters.
Mm-hmm.
However, after a few doses, it hardly had any effect at all.
I think he's talking about appetite suppressing effect.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Hardly had any effect at all.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed this with some other medications and supplements I've tried.
Right.
When they're newly introduced, they work fine, but then...
So I would analogize this to what happens when you put... They've actually done experiments where they use inverted prisms in glasses to give people the most disorienting kind of vision, which is upside down vision.
Mm.
So imagine putting on glasses that make everything upside down.
Yeah.
But what they did in this experiment, I don't know how they got anybody to do this because I wouldn't sign up for this experiment. They found that after a while, people adapted to it. And it's a brain circuitry thing. They kind of rearrange their brain circuits. This also happens sometimes to people who have strokes. They have a disability, but they begin to use different parts of their brain to adapt.
Wow.
And so there may have been an initial honeymoon effect where this it's a prebiotic, actually, mm-hmm. and a fiber, caused this person to experience less appetite. But after a while, the body finds a detour, works its way around that, and the appetite normalizes.
Mm.
Because, you know, as humans, we're lean, mean eating machines.
Right.
And we try to break through whatever impediments we have to appetite.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we have such trouble with diet pills, coming up with the ultimate weight loss pill.
Yeah.
They may work for a while, but then the body or the brain manages to figure something out to get around that.
Right.
There also may be an adaptation in the microbiome in the gut,
mm-hmm.
such that after a while the effect wears off.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to, there is a phenomenon with drugs that's a known phenomenon. It's called tachyphylaxis.
Mm.
And it has to do with the tendency for certain types of drugs to have their effects wear off. But not all drugs.
Mm-hmm.
But this happens with certain antihypertensive drugs. This happens with antidepressants. That after a while, you get used to them. And they don't work anymore.
Right. Builds up a tolerance.
Yes, you build up a tolerance. Certainly we see that with opiates, pain relievers, is they need more and more and more, and then you become hooked. That's precisely the mechanism by which people become addicted.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with alcohol. Alcohol, you know, induces, I mean, if you're not a drinker and you, you know, do a couple of shots of vodka.
You're a lightweight. You fall down.
Right. But those who are used to it, they induce certain detoxification enzymes that more rapidly dispose of alcohol. They are, and I notice this too, if I don't drink for a long time and I have a drink, it's a much more acute effect than if I'm more used to drinking.
Oh, sure. The body's, the liver's not making that dehydrogenase anymore to break it down. So our bodies are elegant at adapting to things like that to a point.
Mm-hmm. So now, when it comes to vitamins, can we say in general that you build a tolerance to all manner of vitamins? Well, just as with drugs, you can't generalize about drugs. You can't generalize about supplements.
No.
And I find that there's quite a variation, inter-individual variation in terms of the development of tolerance.
Right.
And so does that argue for, as some people say, take supplements 3 out of every 4 weeks and then, you know, stop for a week and then restart? I don't believe that that's necessarily merited.
No. I've never seen a case where people told me, I was taking those B vitamins and I felt energetic for a while, but then it stopped. I've never heard of anybody say to me, I've been taking my B12 for a while, but it's not working anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I've never heard that.
Well, one reason, I do see this sometimes with, sometimes people are very low in B12 and they get a B12 shot and it's like, boom, they are like zoom, zoom, zoom. And then they get subsequent B12 shots and it levels off. And the reason being is because when you're replete, you're replete. You know, it's like putting more gas in a full gas tank. It's not going to make a difference.
Right.
That can occur if you're deficient.
Yeah.
And that initial zing that you get when you take a multi or a B complex or B vitamins, it may wear off because there's no longer a problem with deficiency.
Yes. So you take care of the deficiency, you don't need nearly that amount. So that would explain it.
Well, you may need some to prevent the deficiency from recurring, but you're not going to experience an added benefit.
Right. I would also make the same argument for fat-soluble vitamins. You keep taking vitamin A, it's going to accumulate.
Mm-hmm.
You keep taking more and more vitamin D without having it checked, it's going to accumulate. You take indiscriminate amounts of zinc for a time without balancing it with copper and so forth, it's going to do other... The tolerance matter does not apply or anything.
Mm-hmm. What I think there we're talking about the potential for overdosing and overaccumulation with the water-soluble vitamins, a little less likely. I think the only water-soluble vitamin that's associated with some toxicity is B6.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly niacin could be, you know, niacin can affect the liver. That's B3. B6 at very high doses can cause balance problems and neuropathy and
the same problems that a deficiency would cause.
Interesting.
The symptoms
would be
about the same, which is very interesting.
Yeah.
All right. So, Larry, we hope that answers your question. Thank you very much for your email. We have an email from Judy. Hi, Layla and Dr. Hoffman. Thank you for always being able to answer my questions.
Well, I don't know. We're kind of tempting fate here because one of these days we're going to draw a blank.
What? Oh, no. All right. So Judy writes, my 28...
By the way, just a digression. All talk shows, all question and answer shows, of which there are many, you know, it's like you can go to the, you know, there's that... what's her name? Kim Komando, who tells you about stuff related to computers and internet. There's now there's a million health shows. There's a lot of garden shows. There's like home shows, repair shows. They're all based on a single progenitor. You know, like the original ancestor of all animals on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
But at the base of it is a show called The Answer Man, which was a radio show, and it was some, like, genius-type person who, no matter what you asked him, he knew the answer.
Like you, Dr. Hoffman. You're
right.
The answer man.
So I'm like the latter-day answer man, you know.
That's great. Okay.
So, I was talking to a guest the other day, and he said, do you mind if I go off on a tangent? I said, Sure, I said the tangents are always more interested than the scripted part of the show.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, let's digress.
Yeah, that's great. Oh, gosh. All right. Okay, Mr. Answerman, Judy writes.
Yeah.
Dr. Answerman. My 28-year-old daughter was recently at the dentist and recommends she get fluoride topically applied to her teeth to prevent cavities. What are your thoughts on this? Is this necessary? First of all, mm-hmm. fluoride is not terrific for the thyroid. It interferes
yes.
with iodine uptake. That's mm-hmm. my primary concern.
And again, we go to the periodic table of elements. Remember
yes.
chemistry? Okay, there's rows and there's columns.
Right.
And where there are columns, there's a tendency for one thing to potentially interfere with the other. So all these halides,
yeah.
iodine, fluoride, chlorine, they tend mm-hmm. to, and bromine, they're all in the same column.
Mm-hmm.
Go back to see. I knew there was a reason.
I'm going to have to pull up a periodic table now and hang it up or something.
Remember how useless we felt that learning about that was? But actually, there's some value.
Yeah.
There's a potential interference so that bromine in baked goods, it's often used brominated flour.
Yes.
I think it's a preservative.
Mm-hmm.
Chlorine, which is, of course, in our water, it's in our pools,
right.
and fluoride, which is added to water, and it interferes with iodine uptake because
yeah.
it's simply structurally similar atomically.
It's not great for our bones either, the uptake of minerals for our bones.
Yeah, but fluoride actually is used as a bone strengthener, but it creates brittle bone.
Brittle bone.
Yeah.
For
a while it was touted.
It sounds like a bisphosphonate.
Yeah, right. Well, it's similar effect, yeah. It's,
yeah.
Right. Some of these things that strengthen may create brittleness. So,
So, should Judy's daughter, 28-year-old daughter, get fluoride topically applied to her teeth to prevent cavities? Yeah.
Well, here's what I think.
Hmm.
First of all, I think the best way to prevent cavities in a kid is to keep the kid away from refined carbohydrates.
She's 28.
The 28-year-old?
She's 28. Her daughter is 28.
I definitely don't think a 28-year-old needs to have, you know, there's this argument that you do prevent it in kids, and maybe this is it for the great unwashed multitude, you know, people who, the kids are, you know, the people are...
They don't brush their teeth, they swallow the toothpaste when they're four.
They're misinformed, the kids are on terrible diets, they feed them, you know, like Oreos and...
Juice box and cookies.
As a public health measure, we can maybe reduce cavities by applying fluoride to kids' teeth, but there's fluoride in so many things.
Mm-hmm.
And then the kids, it's in toothpaste, and then the kids take inordinate gobs of toothpaste, and they don't just brush and spit out, they swallow it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're probably giving too much fluoride.
Yes.
So I'm not a big fan of fluoride application to teeth. I know we have dentists who listen to this, and some dentists are very pro-fluoride and you know, think that that's the end-all and be-all of cavity prevention and tooth preservation. But I think that the fundamental is diet. Now,
yes.
is that practical for everyone? No, maybe not, and therefore we need fluoride for some kids. I wouldn't do it for my kid.
Some people are going to be more prone to dental caries than others. Diet can impact that, you know, besides good oral hygiene and stuff.
Well, you know what I really like for prevention, and it's much more benign, is xylitol. In toothpaste, there's a Spry dental defense system. It really is excellent for preventing cavities and superior to fluoride.
Judy, get your daughter some Spry chewing gum, S-P-R-Y.
Exactly.
Chewing gum, xylitol.
Because you're only going to brush once or twice a day, but with the gum, you're going to use it several times a day. And that bathes your mouth in xylitol, which suppresses the growth of the bacteria that cause tartar and periodontal disease.
Mm-hmm.
And strep mutans is the most common species of oral pathogen
cavities.
That creates cavities. And it really has been shown to suppress that and without the hazards associated with fluoride.
Using too much mouthwash, because mouthwash tend to be alcohol-based.
Yeah, it's
very drying to the mouth,
upsetting
the microbiome in the mouth. That could be a setup for cavities as well.
And here's another consequence of mouthwash while we're digressing, which we like to do, is that it can raise your blood pressure. How does it do that? It prevents the growth of the bacteria that biotransform dietary nitrates
to
nitric oxide.
Wow.
Yeah, so your Listerine could give you high blood pressure.
Go figure. Would you ever think that?
Yeah.
The Answer Man.
Oh, yep. Carrying on the tradition.
Judy, thank you for your question. Best of luck to your daughter. Let's see here. Mary writes, what can be done about macular degeneration?
Well, a heck of a lot. A heck of a lot. But according to, alarmingly, this gives me an opportunity to kind of do some damage control on a recent article that comes to us from the Cochrane Collaboration. The Cochrane Collaboration is they're sort of...
The
Cochrane Review people. They're sort of the arbiters of science. Mm-hmm. They don't do a lot of original research. They review research, and they try to shed light on practices to see if practices are worthwhile. And recently, they weighed in with the opinion that... I'm trying to find the article here. I'm using my iPad. So what they say here is that...
Well, there are differences. There are two types of macular degeneration, the wet, the dry.
But there's a lot of research, and most of it is based on what's called AREDS 1 and 2, very large research projects that looked at the effect of antioxidants. First, they started with a guy named David Newsom, who in the 1980s found that zinc at high doses improved macular degeneration. And then they did more research on other antioxidants, including lutein and zeaxanthin and DHA from omega-3.
Mm.
And what they found was that, indeed, there was improvement in macular degeneration. Many of our patients report that there... I just had a patient who said that their macular degeneration has stopped today.
Drusen. Yes, they had
drusen, which is a sign of macular degeneration. So the doctor said it's better. So she's been taking an eye formula.
Right.
And eye formulas are really popular. But anyway, I'm looking for the reference here. And what they say is they conclude, based on their studies, and there was a big headline in some medical journal that I read, that eye supplements don't do any good for macular degeneration. And that is not the case.
Did that come out this summer, too? This has been the summer of pushback.
Yeah, and it basically what they did was they looked at AREDS 1 and 2, and there are some methodological problems. Oh, here it is. Okay. It says, antioxidant, vitamin, and minerals supplements for slowing the progression of age-related macular degeneration. It has been proposed that antioxidants may prevent cellular damage of the retina by reacting with free radicals that are produced in the process of light absorption. Higher dietary levels of antioxidant, vitamins, and minerals may reduce the risk of progression of age-related macular degeneration. So they conclude that I'm scrolling down to the bottom line.
And this is the Cochrane Collaboration.
The Cochrane Collaboration. The author's conclusion, people with AMD may experience some delay in progression of the disease with multivitamin, antioxidant, vitamin, mineral supplementation. But this finding was largely drawn from one large trial conducted in a relatively well-nourished American population. That's the AREDS 1 and 2. But that's the significant population, a relatively well-nourished American population. We do not know the generalizability of these findings to other populations. Although generally regarded as safe, vitamin supplements may have harmful effects.
Oh, boy.
They say supplements containing lutein and zeaxanthin are heavily marketed for people with age-related macular degeneration, but our review shows they may have little or no effect on the progression of AMD. Well, the pushback on that was very, very vociferous, and... they pointed out that it was almost like they were looking to dismiss the results of a very, very large trial because some other trials showed less robust results. So I would go with the AREDS trial as suggesting it's actually one of the biggest and most significant trials showing the clinical benefits of a supplement or a combination of supplements on a disease state.
Yeah.
There's not that much good, really good supplement research out there. That, I think, is a milestone in supplement research, and it shouldn't be disregarded.
It should not, absolutely.
So what are the nutrients we're talking about? I would use lutein, zeaxanthin,
DHA.
DHA from fish oil or DHA-rich fish oil.
Zinc.
Zinc, taurine.
Bilberry.
Bilberry.
These are all helpful.
And bilberry is the one nutrient that may also be helpful for dry.
For dry macular degeneration. Okay. Wow. Mary, thank you very much for your question. Okay.
Well, this is a good point at which to pause, because we divided these podcasts into two parts. So in part two, let's hear from what we're going to talk about.
I just had my most recent DEXA scan, and I could hardly wait to share the results with you. My osteopenia...
Stop. Let's keep our...
Okay.
It's called a tease.
A tease.
Okay. Okay, when we return, the results of this individual's DEXA scan and more questions. Questions go to radioprogram@AOL.com. I'm here with Layla Mutin, a registered dietitian and master's degree nutritionist. And we'll be right back with more of our weekly Q&A with Layla.